remains one of the most captivating unsolved mysteries in American history. On November 24th, 1971, a man hijacked Northwest Orient Airlines flight, extorted a ransom, and parachuted into oblivion, leaving behind a trail of questions that continues to baffle investigators and capture the imagination of the public.
It's evil! Don't touch it!
It's alive! I was with you.
They're coming to get you.
This is
me.
Hello, Mr. Fancy Pants.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of Mr. Fancy Pants. And this is Zach Stern talking. I've been on cocaine, so it's good crazy. No. Welcome back.
I deserve
everybody.
That. But in my defense, you did kind of flub the beginning of the last episode. And I was just like, fuck it, we're going.
I couldn't stop giggling.
Yes. So,
it was like a schoolgirl. I couldn't quit.
Kitty is a schoolgirl, yeah.
Todd had me rolling.
You do you, Matt.
Then he kicked me in the balls at the end of it. If you guys listen to the end of the last episode, you got to listen past the credits. Your dog bashed my skull in. Some shit. Lindy, how are you doing?
I'm doing good.
Zach, what is up, my man?
I am present and accounted for, sir.
Let's do this because I do like this story.
Right on. Do you guys, everybody kind of knows this story, I would think. D.B. Cooper, who was not really D.B. Cooper. Somebody fucked that up. It was actually Dan Cooper. And then I believe a newspaper reporter just got it, flubbed it, and everybody ran with D.B. But
it was like that little game that you'd play in like grade school or something. You'd like whisper.
Telephone
game. You'd whisper, and by the time it got back around, it starts out as Jerry wants to go to class. And then by the time it comes back around, our teacher's got a fat ass. And it's only because I was the last person in line.
That's not what I heard. I heard Mary gave Jerry a hand job, but okay. I mean, whatever. That's cool too.
Do you want to come to the front of the class? I'm sorry, I can't right now.
We're not going to really go into like the list of thousands of suspects on this. We're just going to like state this is what happened.
Nothing is confirmed.
Yeah,
nothing. This is one of those mysteries. It's just like,
yeah,
we'll never know.
Mm-hmm. Or maybe we will. You never know.
You know, we're talking about airplanes, and guess who isn't here?
I know. I was kind of upset that he wouldn't be here to talk about this particular aircraft and mm-hmm. this
coincidence.
What does any of this have to do with gay porn?
He is here in spirit.
There you go. All right. Ready? Okay. Here we go. So on Thanksgiving Eve, November 24th, 1971, this seemingly really normal-looking, unassuming guy goes up to the Northwest Airlines counter, Portland International Airport in Portland, Oregon. He's wearing a black suit, maybe a brown suit, kind of, some people, it's varied. It will say it's a darker business suit.
Dark suit.
But he's got this white shirt on and this little thin black tie, black raincoat. He purchases a one-way ticket with cash for flight 305 bound for Seattle Tacoma International Airport. And he uses the name Dan Cooper. Eyewitnesses describe him as a white male in his mid-40s with dark hair, brown eyes, and he's got this brown attaché case and a brown paper bag. For those of you who don't know what an attaché case is, I believe that's just like a little... like briefcase looking.
It wasn't a hardback one though. It was like a soft, probably. I was like, what's in the brown bag, man? Got a 40 LV in that motherfucker.
So once he boards this Boeing 727/100 aircraft, Todd.
What does any of this have to do with gay porn?
He takes his seat.
I'll fill in when needed. Yeah. You already know the line. Yeah.
takes a seat in 18E, which is in the last row. And with his six flight crew.
Dude, he's farthest from the bathroom.
He went all the way to the back. I think he did this probably so he could keep an eye on everybody else in the plane. That's my guess.
Smart so, move.
There's a six-man crew. Let's see. Captain William A. Scott. First Officer William Bill J. Radishek. Flight engineer.
B.J. Radishek.
B.J. Radishek, yeah.
Okay. Let's just see if he wasn't trying to slip one past me there.
Call him Jobs. B.J. Jobs. B.J. as in Jobs. Yeah. Also on board, we've got flight engineer Harold E. Anderson and flight attendants Alice Hancock, Tina Mucklow, and Florence Schaffner.
I'm just going to apologize for my giggling because I'm going to have that Foo Fighters video going through my head.
Yeah. Learning to fly? That's a great idea. Learn to fly. Love it. Yeah. So they have 36 passengers, and Flight 305 departs from Portland on schedule.
You were one away. Because if you would have said 37, I'd be like, 37? Those of you that get it.
Yeah, Kevin Smith. Anyway, yeah. Try not to suck any dicks on the way to the bathroom.
Hey, get back here.
Yeah. So the flight leaves Portland on schedule at 2:50 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. Now, shortly after takeoff, Cooper orders a bourbon and soda, which is pretty common for that time. That was like the drink of choice. Bourbon. Yeah, everybody was into hard liquor. Mm-hmm. And then he passes a note to the flight attendant, Florence Schaffner, who was seated in the jump seat at the rear of the plane by him.
You don't get a lot of Florences these days.
You don't see a lot of Florences now. I think the last Florence I remember was like on the fucking Brady Bunch. Yeah.
Probably.
So, yeah. So as he's, you know, trying to hand her this note, she just kind of like, initially she's kind of trying to blow him off because she's assuming it's like a flirtatious thing. She's trying to like, hey baby, how you doing kind of a thing, you know?
You're not in first class.
So she takes the note and she doesn't even look at it at first. And then Cooper leans in towards her and he whispers, "Miss, you'd better look at that note. I've got a bomb. In my pants."
I'm this far from the bathroom, I'm about ready to blow it up.
So at this point, Schaffner becomes a little more aware that it's, hey, this could be kind of a serious situation. So she opens the note up to find a demand from Cooper that says, "Miss, I have a bomb in my briefcase and want you to sit by me." The note that he had was written really neat, all capital letters with a felt tip pen. And it left no room for her to like doubt him. So
Mommy, this guy knows how to spell and use capital letters. And okay, I'm going to take him seriously.
Mommy, how did you and Dad meet? Well, he handed me a really sweet note on a plane.
Says I got a bomb, baby. So he at that point opens his briefcase to reveal what appeared to be several sticks of dynamite connected to a battery and a wire, creating the illusion of an explosive device in this briefcase.
I bet it didn't take much to pull that out at that time.
Now, you could do it with some fucking road flares.
Yeah, road flares and some wire and like
don't forget duct tape. You need the duct tape.
Duct tape. You gotta have better duct tape, some zip ties, and like some kind of clock that's just got a time on it of some sort.
Yeah, there you go. Pull out one of those little digital watch faces and just duct tape around in front of that. Yep.
As a matter of fact, if it said Acme on there somewhere.
meet, bitches. Meet. So with Schaffner seated right beside him, Cooper calmly tells her what he needs. He wanted $200,000 in cash to be delivered in a knapsack by 5 p.m., along with two front parachutes and two back parachutes. And that was actually pretty smart of him because
if you know, he just said if, one if parachute, asked, they, yeah.
they could have fucking given him a dummy chute. And
or they would have said, "Oh, you don't care about us, eat shit."
Yeah. So they could have just been like, fuck you. This is, you know, like a fake shoot and fucked him. But with the two shoots like that, it's like, okay, this guy might take a hostage. So that was very, very clever of him to think about that ahead of time. So the captain, Captain Scott, was immediately informed of the situation, and then he instructed Schaffner to remain in the cockpit for the duration of the flight, taking notes events. Go ahead.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but how much cooler would it have been if he just asked for an inflatable raft?
And then said, hold on, lady, we go for a ride. It's no time for love, Dr. Jones.
Just need an inflatable raft. Uh-huh. A good-looking blonde and tiny Asian fellow. So I got to bring it up again.
Oh. So Cooper continues to communicate his demands through the other flight attendant, Mucklow, who acted as a liaison between him and the flight crew for the remainder of the flight. As Flight 305 circled Puget Sound to buy time for authorities to assemble all this shit that he wanted for the ransom, Schaffner remained in the cockpit, and Mucklow basically sat there as the intermediary between Cooper and the flight crew.
I also like how he kept the money low enough that it was reasonable enough for them to be able to get it in a short amount of time. He didn't get
I've read somewhere like away. In $20 bills, which is what they gave them, like this much money would have weighed like 20 pounds. So yeah, that's not an exorbitant. It's not like, you know, he's got a shitload of weight to haul around. So that makes it a lot more plausible.
Yeah, exactly. It always makes me think of Bill Burr, too, with his joke where he'd be the one that the hostage that was brought out with, like, the shotgun to his neck when the guy's asking for a helicopter. He's like, I know he's not going to get it. Ask for the rental car. Ask for the rental car.
So as the flight circles around, Cooper proceeds to issue further demands, saying that upon arrival to the Seattle airport, he wants fuel trucks to meet the plane, and all the passengers are going to remain seated until the money and the parachutes are brought aboard. He said at that point he would release all the passengers once he had the money and the parachutes. So the captain, Captain Scott, he lets Seattle know, the Tacoma Airport Air Traffic Control,
ATC,
and they start initiating contact with local law enforcement and the FBI.
But he's making he thought this out well enough to know that they're not going to argue with me over this small amount of money that I'm asking. Well, it was a big amount of money still, but
yeah,
a small enough amount of money, and I'm going to release all the passengers when we land. He's just trying to deflect any kind of, they're just coming on board just to open gun on you.
Right, right.
Yeah, they're going to play the negotiation game like an Airheads. Naked pictures of B. Arthur.
The Lone Rangers. Rangers is plural. What?
There's three of you. You're not exactly alone.
That's a great
movie. I don't know. I don't get what you're talking about.
What are you dreaming about? Swimming pools.
Yeah, man, I don't get it.
Oh, man. So while this is all this is going on, to kind of keep the situation discreet, the pilot basically informs the passengers on the plane that they're having a minor technical difficulty, which is causing a delay in their arrival in Seattle.
Yep, it's minor at this point.
Yeah. So the president of Northwest Orient Airlines, Donald Nyrup, I don't know how the fuck you pronounce it.
Fair enough.
Doesn't matter. He's probably dead. Anyway, he authorized the payment of the ransom, and he instructed all the employees to cooperate fully with the hijackers' demands. So for the next 2 hours, Flight 305 circled Puget Sound, allowing more time to assemble the money, the parachutes, and mobilization of emergency personnel.
Could you imagine just the dude in the back? You know there was at least one or two of those. Oh, what the fuck's up with this? fucking airline. I've got a business meeting. You son of a bitches, and this is bullshit. And then find out later, yeah, there's a dude on the plane with a bomb, you jackass. Probably should have shut the fuck up.
Free drinks? Free drinks? Come on. Free drinks?
That's what you don't want to fuel them.
Yeah.
We've only got 4 bottles of bourbon.
Pour them out. Doubles. Make them doubles.
Let's do this.
So during the flight, Cooper insists that Mucklow remained by his side at all times. And Mucklow later stated she noted he was really familiar with all the local geography as he was like identifying local landmarks like Tacoma, McCord, Air Force Base. And despite, you know, what was going on, she said that he was really composed and just pretty calm and chill and just nice. So he sat there and smoked cigarettes because you could smoke cigarettes on a plane back then, you know. So they're just sitting there.
I was going to say,
that would be weird to see.
These days, yeah. If you get on a plane and there's still an ashtray, get the fuck off it.
Yeah.
I wouldn't trust that shit for nothing.
Yeah. So as they continue circling Seattle, Mucklow, you know, continues to talk to Cooper, and she's like trying to figure out, you know, she asks him, you know, why are you hijacking this plane? She goes, why are you doing this? And his response was very casual when he said, it's not because I have a grudge against you or your airline. It's just because I've got a grudge. And he said, this flight simply suited his needs. And then he asked her where she was from.
Nothing personal, baby. That's what he said.
He asked her where she was from, and she said, you know, she's originally from Pennsylvania, but she was living in Minneapolis. And then he said, Minnesota is a very nice country. And then she asked him where he was from, and at that point, he kind of clammed up, and he refused to answer. He's not fucking stupid. He's not going to, you know, he's not letting on to anything. Then he asked her if she smoked, offered her a cigarette. She said she'd quit, but she accepted the cigarette because, you know, I would too. The guy says he's got a bomb on a plane. You're like, fuck it. If I'm going to die anyway.
I wouldn't even ask what brand, but that's my favorite.
Smoke them if you got them.
It's absolutely my favorite. Yeah.
Yeah.
You got good taste, my man.
Yeah. And
more like bourbon?
During this whole time, he's just real fucking nonchalant about all this shit that's going on. Let's see, the FBI records.
I think they call those lewds.
Yeah.
You think?
Yeah. The horse pills? Yeah.
So you'd have to be on something to be that calm or just that experienced. Fuck.
I would say this dude was very experienced. FBI records indicated that Cooper briefly conversed with an unidentified passenger during the flight's flight pattern over Seattle. One of the passengers recounted an interaction with Cooper and another passenger resembling a cowboy. And this passenger kind of intervened to defuse the situation.
Did he say, I'm your Huckleberry?
Pursuing the cowboy to just take a seat. Now, if you want to dive into this, this dude was pretty much belligerently drunk by this point because they'd been on the plane for like 3 or 4 hours and he was just fucking sitting there drinking doubles. And this other dude, they had no idea what was going on. Like until all these passengers get off the plane, they had no idea that they had been hijacked at all.
That's when you feel like an asshole.
Yeah. Yeah. This guy probably didn't feel anything.
Hey, we didn't blow up in the air and I'm alive. Great.
Yeah. Let's go have another drink.
Such a dick.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bourbon, please.
Yeah. So the $200,000 ransom was obtained from the Seattle First National Bank, delivered in a bag weighing approximately, like I said, 19 pounds, 20 pounds, I said. It consisted of 10,000 unmarked $20 bills. It was mostly traced back to the Federal Reserve Bank of San Francisco. In the meantime, the Seattle Police Department had secured 2 front parachutes from a local skydiving school and 2 back parachutes from a stunt pilot.
That's where I'd want to get them from.
Trying to,
you know, those comply. Are packed properly.
Yeah. Only were they. So at approximately 5:24 Pacific Standard Time.
Doesn't matter if it's packed properly or not if you don't know how to control it on the way down or depending on what the weather is.
These were like old school, we'll get into it, old school parachutes. Like you couldn't steer these. These were like ejection type.
So it's going to be like X-Force from Deadpool 2.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. So at approximately 5:24 Pacific Standard Time, Captain Scott received word from the flight control that parachutes had been delivered to the airport, prompting him to inform Mr. Cooper that they would be landing soon. So at 5:46, flight 305 touched down at Seattle-Tacoma Airport, and with DB Cooper's approval, Scott maneuvered the aircraft to a partially lit runway kind of on the far side of the airport away from the main terminal as per Cooper's instructions. He wanted to kind of stay away, so he knew they wouldn't try to rush the plane.
So he knew the airport too.
Yeah, he was pretty slick. He knew what the fuck was going on.
And I bet it wasn't a lot of Mr. Cooper. I bet it was a lot of Sir, may I?
Yeah.
Sir, may I get you anything else? Please, sir. We've roofied the shit out of our bourbon for you. Because I usually do that to our stewardesses anyway. So.
Leave your lewds to yourself, dude. So Cooper said that, look, only one airline representative would be able to approach the plane with the parachutes and the money. And this designated courier was Al Lee. He was the Northwest Orient's Seattle operations manager. So to avoid any confusion, Lee changed into civilian attire instead of his, you know, normal clothes, whatever he was wearing before. He didn't want to be mistaken for like a cop, law enforcement. Yeah. So
who'd win in a fight between Lemmy and God?
Trick question, asshole. Lemmy is God. Back to Airheads, huh?
Yep.
So, meanwhile,
he's a cop.
Back at the
ranch.
No, back Airfield? At the terminal. The ground crew attached the mobile staircase to the airplane, and following Cooper's directions, Mucklow exited the aircraft through the front door, got the ransom money, and then she carried that back, and then she passed all the seated passengers to Cooper in the last row. And then once, I think it took her two trips, then she went back and got the parachutes, came back, and then once he was satisfied with all the shit, he agreed to release the passengers, and they all exit the plane safely.
So they're already thinking, well, he's a man of his word. He only wanted $200,000. So
that was like $1 million back then. So that
yeah,
was
but
still,
that's still not worth the lives of all those passengers. So I would, it's not even yeah. worth the lives of four crewmen. So that I would have, yeah, they would probably been like, let's kind of just agree with him and fucking go along.
Yeah. Yeah.
What else are you going to do? I mean, really?
Yeah. So as these passengers were exiting the plane, Cooper looks at the money. And at that point, Mucklow is just trying to, you know, kind of calm the situation down. And she jokingly asked if she could keep some of the money. And at that point, Cooper said, yeah, sure. And he started handing her a packet of bills. And then she promptly returned it. And she's like, no, this is against company policies. I can't accept any sort of gratuities. So,
no, because you know what happens then? We're yeah. in the same car together on this drive-by. It doesn't yeah. matter who pulled the trigger. Asshole.
Yeah. Yeah. So once all the passengers had gotten off the plane, and it was just Cooper and these six crew members, they pull up and try to refuel, and it takes a very, very long time. I think that while this is going on, he lets two more of the flight crew go. And so they sit there on the airfield, this delay, just like they're saying they're having issues refueling. And that made Cooper kind of get really impatient.
He's not as calm now.
He's getting a little agitated. It's taking a little too long.
A little giddy.
And he's also kind of pissed off because they delivered this money in like a cloth bag instead of a knapsack. Like he had requested in a knapsack. So he's trying to like figure out how he's going to get this money off the plane. So he pulls out a pocket knife and he cuts into the canopy from one of these reserve parachutes and stuffs some of the money into the empty parachute bag from one of the, it'd be like the front, the reserve parachute. Mm-hmm. And despite,
because he's asking for fuel, and if he's planning on jumping out, I don't think the pilots care just so long as there's enough fuel to get them to where they're fucking going. They'd be like,
right.
I just can't wait for him to leave. Just leave. Dude. Right. Just fuck right. off.
So the FAA, they're trying to get a face-to-face meeting, and Cooper's like, fuck you. It's not happening. Mm-hmm. He wants to take off. And then he provides specific flight directives to the crew, outlining a southeast course he wants to fly towards Mexico City at low altitude and speed. At that point, the pilot informs him they're going to have to refuel because of that airspeed and that low of an altitude, they will never make it.
It's like more drag the lower? The higher you get, less drag or something?
I believe so.
Fucking Todd's not here.
I was going to say.
What does any of this have to do with gay porn?
So... then he's like, you know, fine, fuck it. We'll stop in Reno, Tahoe International Airport. He insists on taking off with the rear exit door open and the air stair extended.
It's going to get drafty.
And they're like, we can't do that. And he was like, oh, fuck yes, you can. So he... This makes me think that he
was probably a pilot then.
He knew the aircraft. He knew that aircraft specifically. So at approximately 7:40, they finally take off again with Cooper, Mucklow, the captain, Captain Scott, the first officer, Radicek, and then the flight engineer, Anderson, remaining on board.
And I'm assuming since on this landing, he didn't have any more demands other than fuel. It probably was a bit more prompt than the last one. So he probably wasn't as nervous.
No, he got what he wanted. Yeah.
Yeah. To ask for the rear end to be open, you would.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of guys ask for the rear end to be open, but you know.
you went a different way. Excuse me, I still got some allergies. I apologize for my last episode when I was snorting constantly every time I was trying.
That's right, you leave your cocaine problems to yourself, Matt.
I would have been worried about like a Humvee full of fucking Navy SEALs or some shit driving up into that.
Oh no, there were two F-106 fighters. Thanks again, Todd.
What does any of this have to do with gay porn?
From McCord Air Force Base and then a Lockheed T-33 trainer. Thanks again, Todd.
What does any of this have to do with gay porn?
Diverted from an unrelated Air National Guard mission that followed the 727. And they maintain like these S flight patterns to stay behind and out of Cooper sight because the plane was going so slow. And you know what I mean? And so low. So they didn't want them to know that they were following them, but they were following them.
Anybody else got the Beastie Boys with the slow and low that is the tempo? Is it just mean it.
Let yourself go. So they finally take off, and then Cooper instructs Mucklow to lower the AFT staircase. Now, this particular plane, thanks again, Todd.
What does any of this have to do with gay porn?
Has an aft staircase. So an aft staircase... lowers from the rear of the plane, I believe. So towards the back, there's a staircase that comes down, and that's you can exit out of the back of the plane that way. This is one of the last planes they put that in, and I think this is the reason. I'm serious as fuck.
Good reason.
So this guy knew that this was doable without crashing the plane.
It's good to say, because if you just try to take like the front exit door and jump out, there's a strong chance your ass is going to fly through that jet.
Oh, yeah.
It's going to suck you right in.
Yeah. So now Mucklow was freaked out and she was afraid of being sucked out of the plane, just like, you know, but he refused to allow her to come go up to the cockpit. He just said, you know, just chill out. It's going to be all right. So then he starts t-
tying all these money bags around his waist. And then Mucklow's begging him to take the bomb when he leaves. So he finally says, okay, you can go to the cockpit. So as she enters the cockpit, this warning light indicated that the staircase had been lowered, deployed around 8 o'clock.
I bet they could feel that too.
Yeah.
Something about, go ahead. Like the air pressure dropping or something, I bet.
Yeah, it did. It did drop. Yeah, they said they noticed it. When the captain asked Cooper over the intercom if he needed help lowering the stairs, he just said no. And then
who knows how to do that?
The pitch of the tail section kind of moved a little bit around 8:13. And that's at that point that the crew got up to take, you know, they corrected the action so they wouldn't, you know, crash. Yeah. And then they returned to flight level. Now with that aft cabin or the aft cabin door open, staircase deployed, they weren't sure if he was still on or not, but they attempted to communicate with him continually until they approached Reno, urging him to raise those stairs for, you know, a safe landing. But there was no response. So at 11:02, flight 305 lands.
You can't raise back up from captain's quarters. You probably can't raise it. You have to be in the back, probably.
You probably have to be in the back to do that, yeah. Once again, if Todd was here.
What does any of this have to do with gate porn?
11:02, they land in Reno, Tahoe International Airport. And law enforcement agencies establish a perimeter around the aircraft. But they kind of are hesitant to approach at first because they think, okay, this dude could still be on the plane. He's still got a bomb, possibly.
Oh, so they used caution instead of like Waco.
Yeah, yeah. So just Captain Scott, that out there. He goes through the plane, conducts a thorough search of the cabin, confirming that, nope, he's not here anymore. So after a 30-minute search, they bring in an FBI bomb squad and they declare that the cabin is safe. The aircraft is, there's no bomb on board anymore. So.
Crazy would that have been if he was like just telling him all that shit and he was actually just snuck into a huge piece of luggage that he had shipped, put on him by himself while he was like wearing a dress or something, and just loaded it and walked out, came back in, crawled inside of it with all of his money.
Yep. Now, during an initial investigation, the FBI agents, they found several items belonging to Cooper, including his black tie clip. Or, I'm sorry.
He wore a clip tie.
It was a clip-on tie, his tie clip, and two of the four parachutes, one of which had been opened and tampered with.
So that's why he wrapped the money in.
Yeah.
Didn't want to wear a regular tie due to the wind as he's coming down, maybe.
Could be.
Or he was just lazy. I don't blame him. I've never owned a regular tie either.
You don't want to like flap into your face. Yeah. Eyewitness interviews conducted in Portland, Seattle, and Reno aided in the creation of a composite sketch to aid in the investigation. And local law enforcement, along with the FBI, immediately began questioning potential suspects. A Portland citizen named D.B. Cooper initially drew attention to his name. Kind of similar. Yeah.
What year was it again? We're looking for a white man with a mustache. Fucking luck.
No mustache. 71.
I thought he had a mustache.
No mustache.
Oh, I thought he had a mustache.
He had like a somewhat like receding hairline and he wore sunglasses on the plane. So
I must have his picture messed up with the Unabomber or one of the other. Yeah.
He didn't wear a hoodie, Matt. No hoodie.
I know. I'm off on all accounts.
Yeah. Now, like I said earlier, because a newspaper journalist hastily reported what was going on, instead of Dan Cooper, which is what he bought the plane ticket as, they said he was D.B. Cooper as the pseudonym for this guy. So that's where everybody came up with D.B. Cooper. And, you know, at that point it became a national story. Now, because of the day it was and where he apparently took off from, efforts to find him were pretty challenging. They weren't sure exactly where he jumped. There was very limited visibility during his nighttime jump.
That's the thing that gets me so much is like he was flying low, so he knew like, you know, he could see this or that. And
but the thing is I think there was so much. It was raining pretty heavily that night, so I don't think he could probably see much.
Jumps out at night in a rainstorm. Yeah. It's like, what was it? You just hope for the best. I can't. I don't know. I'm sorry.
Hope for the best and pull the cordon gate. Geronimo!
Me! Aim for the bushes.
Yep. So they extensively search along the flight path, surrounding areas, but they find no conclusive evidence. Like, ever. Like, in December of that year, the next month, they get an SR-71 Blackbird. Thank God.
What does any of this have to do with Gate 4?
It's my favorite. It's my favorite of all time.
The flight path, an attempt to locate items Cooper may have, you know, carried during his jump. But poor visibility once again hampered photography attempts. No significant findings were found.
Well, so Blackbird can do it in about a fraction of the time.
Yep. Then they try to recreate, you know, everything, you know, with the crew's description of everything and, you know, the tail section, sudden upward pitch in their estimations. They say he possibly landed somewhere near Mount St. Helens. But once again,
how well this guy planned that shit, he could have just opened that at a certain time and just stood there and waited. Just been like, nah. Because I know they're going to have a time for this.
But the thing is, Matt, like I said before, the parachute that he had was not something he could steer. Like, so the wind's going to carry him wherever.
I just mean for the timeline, like how long was it open? Because they said they just left it open because they kept asking and he wouldn't respond. So
right. If
it was open for like an hour, well,
yeah,
that's if it true. Was open for 30 minutes, the area you're searching is going to be nowhere fucking near where he might have ended up landing.
Yeah.
Because he seems to be fucking intelligent.
Yeah, super intelligent. They conducted thorough ground searches, like hundreds of people. Went, including like they took a submarine and they looked at Lake Merwin. Nothing. They could find nothing.
You spent more than $200,000 just on the fucking submarine to find.
Yeah. They did get some serial numbers on some of the bills they gave them, but no one ever found anything at the time.
Yeah, but if you come, I'm just guessing. I'm out mushroom hunting. Let's just say I come across the sack and I open it up and there's a bunch of money in it. I ain't telling anybody shit.
If the serial numbers are recorded, they would be able to find it when it was spent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Come home, run it through the washing machine. Isn't that what you do when you launder money? Is it?
That's exactly what you do when you launder.
It's not the way it goes.
Make sure you iron it so it's nice and crispy when it's done.
I have to start some car wash. That's all I know about laundering money I learned from Breaking Bad.
So the following year, there were 31 hijackings within U.S. airspace.
So easy.
19 of them were strictly for extortion. Just trying to get money.
Get on a plane.
Yep.
Yeah. And 15 of these also demanded parachutes. So you can thank D.B. Cooper because he kind of put into motion the FAA mandating airlines to conduct thorough searches of all passengers, their belongings.
I'm okay with all of it.
Yeah. And
I don't mind taking off my shoes.
Of the, you know, safety devices on 727s. Boeing's. Thanks, Todd.
What does any of this have to do with Jake Bourne?
I actually do have to thank Todd because he taught me a few things after the last time I flew.
Huh.
Yeah.
Which were?
Well, usually when I leave North Carolina, I leave really early in the morning so that I can get home, you know, because I'm a homebody.
Yeah.
I was one of the first passengers to go through the gate the last time I left North Carolina, and I just had on a hoodie and like a bra, and they made me take off my hoodie and walk through the airport.
You were just wearing a hoodie and a bra, so you walked through just a bra on.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. No underwear, no pants.
Well,
come on.
I mean, a top.
Yeah.
Dark. So Todd was like, they can't do that. So Todd taught me some safety things for the
but
next
time. But they did. They did that time, huh?
They did that time. It was so early, and I was just, I was done. I was already done.
Yeah. Didn't care.
Yeah, I was just like, you know what? There's fucking 10 people in this airport. Here.
That guy won $5 from each one of his buddies he made a bet with. Better get it.
Now on lane four, Lydia. We've got Lindy. Gentlemen.
I'm sorry. That was perfect.
Yeah.
Well, that would have been a perfect opportunity to sneak on board because you know all the dudes are running the computers. What was that?
Rewind.
Slow. Can we slow-mo that?
Dreamweaver. Oh, my God.
Something like that, yeah. The only thing interesting to look at is my tattoos. So.
All right. So in 1972, the FAA mandates.
Did you see all of her tattoos? She's definitely guilty of something.
Yeah. Something. The FAA mandated the installation of all these safety devices on Boeing 727s, known as the Cooper Vane. This mechanism comprised of a spring-loaded aluminum blade mounted on a pivot, effectively preventing the lowering of the aft air stair during flight. So,
kind of seems like something should have been installed to begin with. I mean, really.
Yeah, it's there to... ensure that the door remains securely closed while the aircraft's in motion.
Yeah, but this was back in the day where everybody trusted people so much. That's why we have so many serial killers.
This is why you wait in line for fucking hours going through security at the airport.
And
D.B. Cooper.
Even when that dog sniffed my bag twice and I had to go empty it out because they thought I had cocaine in there. They were like, well, we don't care what you did on that island. I'm like, yeah, no shit. What can you do about that? He's like, there's nothing in there. Go ahead and look at it.
Yep.
He's sniffing your wallet. Okay. Well, did you put your wallet in the safe in the room? Well, fuck yeah. Where do you think I put it? Well, that's where a lot of people put their cocaine. I'm like, is that so?
I'm thinking of my ass.
Stuck it in my prison wallet.
Save that guy for later.
So they also put peepholes in cabin doors, like for the flight crew, so they could see out and monitor passengers without monitoring or out compromising the security of the cockpit because of this as well. So lots of suspects, lots of people question. Nobody is convicted. And then
I'm going to bring it. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm sorry to cut you off again. My mind's spinning with all this airplane shit.
Yeah.
But you know that the locked captain's quarters, that's great, where there's absolutely no way in it.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's been things that have happened since then where, like, the captain was like, I gotta go take a piss. Goes to the bathroom and the co-pilot locks the door. Well, he can't get back in and then flew it into a mountain because he was depressed that day. They need to have some kind of... Well, there's armbands neck bands for dogs to get in to unlock, like the doggy door. You need at least a captain to be able to get back in that motherfucker.
We need to train the dogs to fly the planes. Yeah. Maybe the gatos.
So in February of 1980, an 8-year-old boy named Brian Ingram is on vacation with his family along the Columbia River at a spot known as Tina Bar, which is like 9 miles downstream from Vancouver.
Eat your dinner, Tina, you fat lord.
God. Tina. Those are my tots.
So while he's raking the sand near the riverbank to make a campfire, he finds 3 packs of cash amounting to like $5,800. Now, these bills were kind of...
Score.
They were very deteriorated from being outside so long, but they were still wound with rubber bands. So They inform the FBI, and it's confirmed that the money was part of the ransom money.
What nice people. I mean, honestly, I would have just been like, I'm taking this.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, where'd you get that money? I found it on the beach. What are you going to do? I bought an Alfa Romeo.
Yeah. In 2019, is that right? Yeah, 2019. The FBI finally released a report detailing a burglary near Hessen, Washington, which wasn't too far from where they thought he jumped. And it happened really shortly after Cooper's jump within the drop zone. So, and this burglar didn't rob the place. Like, he only took survival items like beef jerky, gloves. So they're thinking that he might have survived the jump.
Okay, most polite, gentlemanly, like, you know what? He didn't hurt anyone. So maybe he did have a bit of a conscience to him. He just wanted some money because he was mad about something.
Well, you know, like he said, he didn't have anything against, you know, he didn't have a vendetta against anybody that was, you know, at that airline. Right. He just had a vendetta. Yeah. So
I've been pushed to my limits and I ain't going to take any more. Now I'm going to plan all this shit out. Yep. It's like Killdozer, which we'll do one day, I promise.
There were over 1,000 serious suspects that the FBI questioned over the years. In 2016, the FBI announced its suspension of active investigation into the Cooper case would cease so that they could allocate resources to other matters that are higher priority.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But they encouraged local field offices to be receptive to any credible physical evidence and anything pertaining to, like, the parachutes, the ransom money. 66-volume case file amassed over the span of 45 years at that point.
Damn.
Yeah, I looked some of this stuff up on the FBI website. You can actually go through some of these documents and... It's available to the public through that site if you want to look through it. But it still remains unsolved. It's the only unsolved case of air piracy in commercial aviation history in the United States. And there are so many people that we could go through, you know, as far as like serious.
But there's no definitive one is the thing.
That's just like, it. There's no definitive proof. So I kind of left all that part alone. I mean, if we wanted to go through that stuff, that would take another hour.
Well, yeah, it's just like just like the court cases, which most people don't give a rat's ass about, except for Lindy when she had to do hers because everybody wanted it.
I do want to mention though that there was around that time there was a French comic about pilot that would go on all these adventures and jump out of planes, and his name was D.B. Cooper or Dan Cooper.
So I figured it out.
Lots of speculation. I don't think this guy was like an amateur. Let's put it that way. I think he knew exactly what the fuck he was doing.
No, yeah, he had to. He had to have known that plane. He had to know the flight path. He had to have known the airport that they landed at to get fuel. The next one, it was just like,
he was too familiar with his surroundings.
$200,000 in a baguette, please. I mean, I need $200,000 and four parachutes. Wait a minute.
Any questions, comments, concerns?
I think I've just been really into this episode, honestly. I love the story.
Nobody even died. This is one that I've wanted to do for a long time, and I was just like, because they keep, like, there was just something that came out in February that somebody said, I think it was my dad, I have his parachute from the 70s, and they give it to the FBI, and then they gave him a sample of their DNA to see if it matched anything, because now, with the way technology has advanced, they can do, like, DNA samples off, like, his tie hat.
DNA on it, yeah, DNA, of course it
works, so they're going to see if it matches, and if that's the case, we can come back and say, it was this dude.
Yeah, but like I said,
If you want to learn more about this, we could do the suspects as a bonus episode, but it would be another hour just going through like just the main, like there are like 8 really big main ones, and they're all fucking characters. So
if I do that and I land and I have $200,000, I'm going to keep that parachute with me for the rest of my life. I'm just gonna be like, oh, you beautiful son of a bitch.
I'm burning that motherfucker.
Just taking it with me. I'm like, no, I'll never let you. It'd be like my blankie.
My blankie. So ignorant. My whoopee.
Yeah. Oh, shit.
I knew a little about like D.B. Cooper, but I've never really done a lot of research on this story.
The thing that I didn't research a lot on this episode was the plane stuff, because I wanted to know more about that, thinking that, mm-hmm. you know, the Todd was going to be here, and now the Todd's not here, so mm-hmm. thanks, Todd. Well,
he can neither confirm nor deny anyway.
Oh, he could tell us about planes and
plane stuff, and
stairs and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I totally want Todd to do a whole episode on Skunk Works.
Yep.
One of these days, if he's able.
Mm.
It would be super fun. Probably not able.
Probably not.
Really like to know. Yeah, as soon as you said SR-71, I'm like, ooh, I'm a child again. It's my favorite thing. I love it. Mm-hmm. I'm back at space camp.
Yeah. Well, guys, that's all I got this week. It's nice and rainy, and it's like monsoon season where I'm at right now. I'm not gonna have to mow for like 6 days probably, and I'm not gonna step outside because I might trip over a gator.
Oh, gosh.
That's how much it's raining. It's like a swamp out there right now.
It's been raining since like 7 o'clock this morning.
Straight, and it's like downpour. Just like have you seen my backyard? There's a river that runs through it right now.
Right now.
Yeah.
You know what used to be my backyard? I mean, it's fenced off. It's a fenced off river. I can only imagine just like a stream. It's like we used to have patio furniture and like a burn pit out there, and it's washed away. It's up against the fence over there, and we'll get it later. Put it back where it's supposed to go.
But in the meantime, you know, let's go get some crawdads or something. You know what I mean? Let's go crawdad hunting.
Be a good time. No, that was great. That story's always fascinated me. I love the fact that, like you said, no one got hurt. He was a gentleman the whole time.
Yeah.
It sounds like a big amount of money, but a lot of people that do stupid shit like that, as it was like, you know, they make fun of it in Austin Powers movies. I want a billion, gajillion, fulfillion dollars.
$1 bajillion.
He's just like, I want 200 grand.
Yeah.
We can do that. We can make this happen. And I'll let everybody go.
Yeah.
And so they did.
And actually,
fantastic.
That particular plane was sold to another airline and continued use through the 80s, I think, before it was finally decommissioned.
Did they charge extra money to sit in a seat?
No. No.
I would have. They would have today. Oh, you want the D.B. Cooper seat? No, that costs more than first class.
Yeah. But you do get a free pair of sunglasses in a... bourbon and soda. And a
briefcase with a fake bomb in it.
Yeah. So
did he just toss the briefcase then, or did he leave it?
Unknown.
Wow. But then he had to have tossed it. I bet he tossed it.
He might have put money in there. That's what I would have done.
Yeah. Well, you said, he like bagged it up and like tied it to himself, which I would have done too. Because if you're just going to throw the bags,
you can't.
And you don't know where you're going to land. Do that,
like you're going to, like the bag's going to hit you on the way down. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? You're going to have to throw the bag first. That's the only way it's going to happen.
And then you're never going to find the fucking thing.
Yeah, because it could fucking land a mile away from you. So,
and if it only weighs 20 pounds, you're good to go.
I was going to say, at that point, I would have strapped it to the front chute like he did. I would have put as much in there. I probably would have just put both of them on the front and said, fuck it.
Yeah.
And then put the back parachute on the front on top of both of those, just in case I needed it.
And I love the fact that he offered the stewards.
Maybe put like $2 or $3 $20 bills in my shoes, just in case, you know, I lost some of it. Needed money for the way home.
Are you going to share any of that? Well, fuck, here you go. He didn't even care.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I don't know if it was necessarily about the money.
No, it wasn't. That was to prove a point. I bet he was fired by an airline earlier that week or something.
A lot of airlines were going on strike because of it was tough times. It could have been Canadian. I mean, it's close to the border.
And this could have been totally, he did this, didn't care about the money even.
Right.
Just went home and went about his life, just lived it out and never done another thing the rest of his life. But every night before he went to bed, he just giggled a little.
Maybe not, Matt. And what,
his wife would be like, why do you giggle every night before you go to sleep? Shut up, leave me alone.
Like I said, if people want it, we can do some of the suspects in it. If it was one suspect, then he turned around and did this again not long after this.
Yeah, that was the only thing I was thinking. It's like, you know, bank robbers. If you just, your chances of getting away with a bank robbery if you only do one are vastly superior if you keep trying to fucking do it. So maybe he was like, I'll rob a bank, I'll rob a plane.
Maybe it was like, this is the practice.
I'll hit up a 7, probably started at a 7-Eleven, work his way up.
When you think about it, he did this on the day before Thanksgiving. It's one of the busiest travel days of the year.
He knew the pilots were drunk. Everybody parties the day before Thanksgiving.
Yeah, so you got like a 4-day weekend at least.
I gotta put up with this family that I'm not really related to, other than by marriage. Tomorrow, fuck, I'm getting blasted.
Yeah,
turn football on. I'm gonna
I'm gonna take a nap. Put me in a turkey coma and let me know when it's time to go back to work.
Why the fuck did you pass the noodles before the mashed potatoes? I'm going to slap you in the mouth. What kind of family is this?
Stop it. You're making me hungry.
I'm just going to go ahead and say that there's some people out there going, yeah, no, he's right.
All right. You guys got anything else?
No.
All right.
No.
I don't. That was great.
All right. Well, glad you enjoyed it. Thanks for tuning in this week, guys. If you want to hear more on DB Cooper, let us know. Hit us up at hmfppod@gmail.com or on Spotify. Voice.
Yep.
You can send us a direct message or voicemail through there. And we will see you next week. Until then, I'm Zach.
Spar.
Lindy.
And we will see you next Tuesday.
Later.
Later.
Bye.
It's evil! Don't touch it!
It's alive!
My wife is you.
They're coming to get you.
By the power of Christ.
This is
me.
Hello, Mr. Fancy.
What's my line, Zach? What's my line?